and welcome to the Sports Polygamy Podcast. I'm Eric George, and it's the 9th of November 2012, and it's also essentially halfway through the NFL season, so I thought I'd bring on my main lover, Kirk Dalziel, to talk about one of my favorite sports. How are you, Kirk?
I'm very... And to quote the Chappelle Show, I'm rich, bitch!
Yeah.
I had a big win. Thank you to all my my NFL teams for coming through and getting me back into the race of at least breaking even. So I'm pumped about the NFL season again.
Yeah, you don't feel like this is just what we were talking about last week on our podcast, Kirk, that this is a dick tease that keeps you wasting your money?
Yeah, but you've seen me get dick teased before. I'm a sucker for a tease.
Yeah, that's true. It just has to walk into a bar and grab you by the penis and you're in.
No man can turn it down. So what do you got for me this week, Eric?
So yeah, I figured we could just go through and try and answer some questions that have been raised by the first half of the season so far. And the one that I can't figure out the most, more than anything else this season, is the San Francisco 49ers. Because you look at them on paper, they have a beastly running game, they have a beastly defensive game. Both lines, offensive and defensive, are dominant. They're athletic, they're very strong, they can really control the pace of a game. Their quarterback isn't terrible. Their special teams play is strong, they've got a good kicker and a decent punter. And it seems to me like if I was going to sit down and draw all the things that I'd want to control the pace of games and to get consistent production, it'd be a great running game, a great defensive line, and a great offensive line. And they've got all of them, but yet they've been so patchy. So I think it's really interesting to consider why the hell they haven't gotten more reliable production from the team so far.
The answer is the coaching error.
Wow.
And this may surprise you, but I think their run game may actually be a hindrance to San Francisco. Because the big issue here is that a purely run-based offense, or mostly run-based offense, is never a high-scoring offense, which then results in your defense needing and your special teams needing to be almost perfect because your margin of error is so small. And my main concern is that they're not using Alex Smith enough, and I think he's turned into the passer that they always thought he might become. I mean, you just got to look at his stats, where he's second in completion percentage at 69%. He's fourth in yards per attempt at 7.9 yards per attempt. He's got 12 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. He's fourth in quarterback rating at 102.1. But do you know where he is in passing attempts in the league?
Where?
31st. He's only one above Hustle and Bustle Man Muscle Russell Wilson. So I think that's their big issue. They've got a guy that's got a great quarterback rating. He's been pretty efficient with 2 touchdowns to every 1 interception. And they just don't use him. They aren't throwing the ball enough with him, I don't think. So then you're leaving yourself with an offense that isn't fast enough to score enough points if your defense is slightly off.
Mm. Yeah, Football Outsiders isn't as high on him as you are. They rank him 12th or 11th, depending on which of their measures he is, defensive yards adjusted, that kind of stuff, you know, where they include strength of schedule and all that. I'm not sure I entirely agree. I mean, Alex Smith is doing pretty well right now, and he's got a pretty good bunch of receivers to go towards. I've always been a believer that, especially as an outdoor team, even though it's a fair weather city, a run game is always going to be more important to you than a passing game. I don't know. It's a tough one to consider. I do find it hard to believe that if they turned Alex Smith into a high attempts quarterback, that'd be good for them. I mean, look what's happened to somebody like Joe Flacco this year, where they've taken a quarterback who used to work pretty well on a run first team and then turned him into a pass first team. And that pressure can sometimes get to guys a little bit.
Yeah. I'm not asking them to turn him into, 50 pass player a game, but he's passing it 26 times per game. That's it. So I mean, that's really low production. So boost that maybe to 35. You don't need to blow it through the roof. Mm. But the issue is, if you get behind with a running based offense, it takes so long to maneuver up the field because you can't get players out of bounds. You can't stop the clock as much. So your game clock runs really quickly with a run based offense. So if you get behind, it's very hard to bring it back. So I think that's probably why they've been the most inconsistent. It's just not that margin of error.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. I've heard that argument a couple of times, that obviously you can't really control the tempo. But by the same token, it's an NFL game. It's 4 quarters. I fail to believe that defense is going to put you more than 2 touchdowns, you know, behind at halftime. And it's, you know, even with a running game, you can still get more than 2 touchdowns in a half. But anyway, we'll agree to disagree there. I think it's certainly a conundrum, and it's going to be an interesting one to see how they shape up. I think they can certainly improve. One team that has been a little bit of a surprise so far this year, as well in the NFC, has been Chicago, who have had a beastly defense. Obviously, a lot of people are talking about Peanut Tillman's chance to get defensive MVP this year. The question is, can they hang in there? Their offensive line, to me, still looks a little bit worrying. And I'm not entirely sure that they'll actually be able to hold off Green Bay and win that division. Although they've got a solid lead at this point, I just feel like it's Chicago. Something's going to go wrong.
Yeah, well, they're not having a great run of luck lately, but I like Chicago's defense, and I think defense wins championships. The playoffs are where they're going to have the real issue, because I think that side of the league is definitely the best when it gets into the playoffs. And you're right, the Packers have a very easy schedule. I mean, the Giants are probably the only good team that they play out of division for the rest of the season. They've got teams like Tennessee, the Browns, and the Bengals, and the Chiefs. I mean, they're cakewalks.
I wouldn't call the Bengals a cakewalk. Bengals' defense has been good this year.
Yeah, but they're still not great. I mean, it's not like having to play Houston, San Fran, and the Seahawks.
Yeah, that's a tough schedule for sure.
If you're Jay Cutler. So I'm going to say that they hang in there purely based on the defense, and Jay Cutler can, if he has an amazing day against Green Bay, that sort of nullifies it. And I just like Jay Cutler. He looks like a scraggly, drunken idiot and doesn't seem to give a stuff what people think. So I like him so much that I want him to win. But yeah. I do get to go and watch him play San Fran, which will be fun.
That'll be good. If there are any listeners tuning in who want to get either Kirk or myself a Christmas present, a Jay Cutler smoking T-shirt would be fantastic. We do love him both dearly. But Kirk, so you think he's going to win the division? You think that he can carry the Bears to the top of the NFC North?
I think so. He's been pretty solid this year. I mean, the offensive line has been a little bit better because they'd been woeful previously and he'd been getting beat up, but it seems like they just transported them straight to the Philadelphia Eagles, so that's fine. And now Michael Vick's getting a face full of that. But he's been a bit more consistent. He doesn't seem to just slam it into triple coverage anymore. I think he's maturing. And they've got a really good team, and they've got a really good defense, so if he's having an off night, he doesn't need to score that many points to win a game.
Yeah, and his go-to game plan of just pass it to Brandon Lloyd every fucking play has been pretty effective for him so far. Marshall,
if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. And the one thing that probably worries me about that defense, though, is the fact that they're so reliant on Urlacher, who's admitted himself that he's not the athlete he used to be. And even if he's not making the plays, he's a bit like Ray Lewis or somebody. He's an on-field quarterback on their defense who can, call the plays, motivate guys, and really rally the team. And I think if he goes down, which you conceivably could, that'll be a very big issue for them going forwards.
Yeah, well, did you see Urlacher try and run that touchdown back? He looked like he was at a casting shoot for a 1950s mummy movie.
It was Sterling Motlock-esque, I think.
I mean, it was slow, but he's an inspirational leader and he's intelligent. And that really helps him. But if either him or the Peanut go down, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. So if they can stay healthy on defense, they'll be fine.
All right, let's jump across conferences. We mentioned the Ravens before and go from the NFC North to the AFC North, which has been a curious division to follow so far. A lot of people got onto the Ravens early, obviously. Then they've had some really big, injuries on defense that have taken the heart out of that team. And obviously the Steelers started slow, but seem to be really picking up ahead of steam at this point, Kirk. So the Baltimore Ravens have got a one-game lead on Pittsburgh right now. Cincinnati and Cleveland both seem to essentially be out of the frame at this point. So who do you reckon wins the AFC North?
I'm going to say that the Steelers win it. The out-of-division games schedule is far easier than Baltimore, who have to contend with Washington. Sure, they're 3-6 or whatever it is, but they've got RG3. They've also got Denver and the Giants there as well. The defense is old and starting to fall to pieces, which isn't good. And I'm not sold on Joe Flacco at all, really. He's been a bit fluky this season. And you can't go past Ben Roethlisberger. The man's a genius at times. He may get his knob out in a club in front of a woman, but he dodges players like he dodges jail time, Eric.
Oh, he is, yeah. Probably him and Eli Manning are neck and neck for the most frustrating players in the NFL to watch because they just defy logic. He's extraordinary. And, I mean, I've gotten down on Roethlisberger sometimes because he just he makes some dumb plays. But he is a warrior, and he does certainly developed some really good plays for his team. The thing for the Steelers has been the resurgence of their run game. Redmond and Mendenhall really looked strong this year, especially Redmond last week had a fantastic game. So I agree. I think the Steelers are really actually coming on at the right end of the season. And even with Suggs starting to get both, you know, power and both of his legs back for Baltimore, there's just too many issues with that secondary. I think they're really going to struggle. And I agree, Flacco is just I think he's a big issue for that team. If they just hand it off to Ray Rice more, they might be able to get a wild card spot. But they could actually go into a bit of a tailspin, I reckon.
Well, put it this way, Eric. Ben Roethlisberger has won, what, 2 rings? And Joe Flacco has won a squadoosh. Yeah. So if I had to pick between the two teams, I'm definitely going to go with Ben. He's a big, strong guy. So
he's basically a fridge that grew arms.
Fridge that learned how to throw. But that's the thing. He can dodge players and he can evade players, whereas I don't know if Flacco has that in him. And Roethlisberger's got a really strong arm and got a great coach. So I'm going to say that the Steelers get it.
Yeah, it's just but this is the thing about Roethlisberger is he hangs on to the ball for so long. I mean, he leads the league in sack rate, but for a reason, because he throws dumb passes. But then, yeah, you'll be right. He'll do something insane like stiff arm a defensive lineman and throw a 70-yard on the run touchdown pass or some crazy bullshit that makes you wonder how he does it. But the consistency at which he produces some of those wild plays, you've got to give him credit.
All you have to do is look at that pass that he threw against the Cardinals in the Super Bowl a while ago. Yeah. I mean, that was into triple coverage, and he threw that into – that was probably the most perfect pass in Super Bowl history. And up until then, he hadn't exactly set the world on fire. So he's got that impact player ability about him.
Yeah, I think Brett Favre wept a single tear of appreciation for the arrogance of that throw. But anyway, let's move on, because one team that's confused a lot of people – so far this season has been Atlanta. A lot of people said they've been one of the luckiest undefeated teams in recent league history. They sit at 8-0 currently. They've pretty well already wrapped up their division, as New Orleans is kind of a mess still, and Tampa Bay have been inconsistent. But they've had some weird lucky breaks and a lot of very unconvincing wins. So how do you place them so far, Kirk?
Look, great. They've gone 8-0, but are they the real deal? I say hell no. Look, they've got a division where all their teams are under 500. Tampa Bay is their biggest threat. And
Tampa Bay's at 500, in fairness.
Well, at 500. Well, yay. But they are their biggest threat. They haven't really played anyone of note. I mean, they've got a pretty easy schedule.
The win against the Broncos was good. You've got to give them credit for that.
Give them that as well. But that's one win out of the eight that they've actually played that have been a quality side. And then you've got to think, well, when they get into the playoffs, they're going to have to play somebody like the Giants or the 49ers or the Bears or Green Bay. And can you really see them beating those teams? I'm still not sure. Until I see it in the playoffs, I can't say that this team is the real deal at all, because if you're going to continually beat up on the lower teams, you can't call them the real deal until they start beating the really good ones consistently, not just one off.
Yeah, and that is obviously always going to be the question over Matt Ryan, who's yet to win a playoff game. It's wait and see what they can do at the end of the year. They got embarrassed in the playoffs last time around. I agree. The thing that interests me about Atlanta is it's kind of the same as San Francisco. If I had to sit down and, you know, on paper, look at what I want from a team, especially towards the end of the year, keeping in mind they're in a dome and they've got a good record, so they'll probably stay at home throughout the playoffs until the Super Bowl. I think that, you know, they've got a very good running game. They've got potentially the best wide receiver core in the league right now. They've got a good quarterback. They've got a solid offensive line. They've got a Hall of Fame tight end. They've got a great defensive line. They've got some, you know, cornerbacks who make plays. They've got a great kicker. Like, they've got a lot of pieces there. So if they can figure out a way of getting it to gel, it's kind of bizarre to say that we're waiting for an 8-0 team to get it together. But that's how I feel at this point, that they could almost just destroy people in the playoffs if they can make it click.
Yeah, maybe you're right, but once again, I'm just all about the Giants. If you have to play the Giants at all, I wouldn't want that.
Okay.
There's so many good teams on that side of the league that are consistently playing really good teams.
Yeah.
That it's going to be a big step up for the Atlanta if they suddenly go from playing chump change to the big dollar bills, y'all.
Yeah, the NFC does bat deep right now. It is impressive for sure. Let's move on to looking at some player-specific stuff. for the rest of the year. Obviously, I'm going to just avoid talking about New England at all because they upset me too much. The NFC East, I think, is still too much of a mess to bother talking about. And most of the other divisions seem to be kind of stitched up. I don't think really anybody out of the AFC West is going to make much noise at all. So, Kirk, who do you think has been who do you think is currently the best quarterback in the NFL?
This may surprise you, Eric, but I'm going to go with my man, Peyton Manning.
Really? So you think, not, just for this season, if you had to get a guy to lead your team, you go with Manning over Rodgers?
I think so. His stats are incredible. 300 yards per game, 20 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions, and I think about 4 or 5 of them came in one game.
Yeah.
He gets a first down on 38% of his first down passes, which is up the top. He's got an incredible quarterback rating.
Yeah.
He may be throwing lame ducks and the zip may be gone, but I think what a lot of us forgot was his intellectual side of his game, the way that he reads defenses and the way he manipulates the defenses and his wide receivers to go where he wants them to go based on the defense there. So while he can't fire them deep and jam it into triple coverage like Brett Favre or Jay Cutler, take note! He's actually using his intellect to create open spaces. It's incredible to watch because the ball's traveling at about 4 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's like he's like doing the Stephen Larkham thing at this point, where he's got no physical ability, but he just kind of tricks them into letting it through. I'll give you that. It's interesting to consider. We also kind of forgot that he is the grandmaster of the no huddle offense as well. As soon as his team kicks up the tempo a little bit, it's just lights out for defenses. You have to wonder if the current climate of the NFL is favoring his comeback a little bit, in that, you know, it seems like right now in the NFL, the no huddle offense is basically just hitting the easy button for a quarterback, because you're seeing a lot of potentially average quarterbacks looking pretty good in that no huddle setup. Whereas if this was 5 years ago and Ray Lewis was still coming in and mounting quarterbacks and every two or three plays, it might have been a harder job for him.
Well, I think the whole reason that the no huddle is working so well is that there are no offensive linemen. The offensive line, for some reason, is significantly poorer than the defensive line. So by keeping the defensive guys out there, who are usually a lot fatter, they can tire them out a fair bit faster, and that keeps the pressure off the quarterback, because there are very few good offensive linemen around at the moment. It's really odd. So if you can tire out the defensive line, then you can protect your quarterback a little bit more. So
yeah, I'm not sure about that. It's interesting. I think one of the things we're seeing a lot is a simplification of some offensive game plans as well, especially with these younger quarterbacks around. You're seeing teams not really drawing up crazy gadget plays as often as they are just running simple plays repeatedly and relying on that physicality to wear out a defense rather than schematics.
Yeah, you may be right in that as well. I think RG3 is by far and away the most entertaining quarterback, though. I can't stop watching him.
For me, I still say Rodgers. I think his peak is better than what anybody else can produce right now, especially when you include the fact that he can run quite easily.
Yeah, he can.
He can scramble very well, and that just adds another dimension. And yeah, I just still feel like I think Peyton has been incredible so far, and certainly, I mean, I bet the fact that he'd be dead by now, so I'm impressed by what he's been able to do. But for me, Aaron Rodgers. So you mentioned RG3, Kirk, so let's move on to the rookies. He has been super exciting as a rookie quarterback. It's kind of like a halcyon era for the NFL right now with the young talent they've been able to produce under center. But for me, I think Andrew Luck has been more impressive.
Oh, I concur. I concur big time.
With what he's had to work with, that team was just a crime against humanity last year. They were so bad. And he's managed to get them to a above 500 record with just numerous absurd performances. I mean, some of the drives are very lucky. I mean, he's got the real Eli Manning-esque arse about it, where he'll have two defensive linemen hanging off him and he'll be down on one knee and he'll still complete a pass. But nonetheless, that's very impressive, and he keeps doing it. So I've taken my hat off to him. He's looked very good so far.
Well, the simple measure for this, Eric, is Washington Redskins at this time of the year, 3-6.
Yeah.
Last year, 3-6 this year. You know what the Colts were? 0-8. They're now 5-3.
Yeah.
So I think he's been the biggest improvement. I mean, while RG3 has the great razzmatazz and it's terribly exciting and he can run and he can pass and he can do all that sort of stuff, he gets knocked out, though. I just think Andrew Luck has just put up incredible numbers, and I can see him being a long-term quality quarterback.
Yeah. And you're
and he doesn't have the pieces to work with that RG3 has to work with at all.
He's got Reggie Wayne. And that's something. And that has been his go-to a lot of the time. It's just like, oh, God, pass it to Reggie Wayne. But that's fair enough because he's working with a Hall of Fame wide receiver there, albeit an old one. The other thing you've got to give Luck is it's been a bit of a tough season. I mean, people have said, well, obviously he's got the inspirational factor with Chuck Pagano, his head coach being removed and having a battle with cancer. But by the same token, his first season in the league, he hasn't had a head coach to help him develop. And he's had to operate in an environment where he's head coach and there's all this media surrounding the fact that there's this off-field incident. And despite that, he's been able to develop into a really poised, you know, very reliable quarterback. I think that's commendable.
How much pressure is that?
It's a lot.
Welcome to the league, son. Here's your first season. You don't have a coach. He's actually getting treatment for cancer. By the way, don't fuck this up.
Yeah, he's been great. He's been great.
That speech that Pagano gave the other night at the end of the game was incredible.
Oh, man.
I had goosebumps. That was amazing.
Yeah. It was very powerful. It's very powerful. It's such an American thing as well, right? The head coach battling cancer, the team getting inspirational wins for him. But, yeah, it's been great to watch. Once again, another preseason bet that I got horribly wrong, where I just thought they were so bad last year they couldn't overcome it in one season, but they have proved me wrong already. I think I bet they were going to get less than 4 wins and they're already on 5. So Kirk, who has been the MVP of the season so far?
I'm going to say Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, interesting.
I think he's been incredible. He's the whole reason that the Vikings are relevant, really. Obviously Ponder had a couple of good games early, but you know,
I think number 69 on the defense would probably want to look in that conversation as well.
That as well. But look, 106 yards a game, 5.7 yards a carry, 957 total yards, 6 touchdowns. He has a bionic leg. He's just been rapid. I can't believe how well he's recovered from this knee injury, and it gives me a lot of hope for Derek Rose as well. But that the only reason he's the only reason that I would watch the Vikings.
Oh, man, he was amazing last week.
And I don't know if he's fumbled. I don't think he's fumbled the ball all that much because he was notorious for the old dropsies.
Yeah, they've retaught him how to carry the ball.
But he has been incredible this year. So I'd say if I had to pick an MVP candidate thus far, I'd say Adrian Peterson.
So when I sat down to think about this, I thought about, to try and make it more realistic, how people seem to determine the MVP when they vote for him. So it's almost exclusively a player on a team with a strong record. It's generally a player who's put up gaudy numbers, has had a highlight reel, and there's some kind of narrative behind him. So I've gone a little bit off the reservation here, Kirk. I'm going with the Houston Texans' J.J. Watt to be the MVP of this season so far, because I think at 7-1, they've been great. I think no other player has been as important for his team and has yet to look bad. I've watched the Texans quite a bit, and every single game, he's been out of control good. He tips passes and creates picks for his team. He is just a sack machine right now. It just creates so much pressure from a position, you know, playing essentially on the inside of the line in his 3-4 starts. It's not like he's getting to rush the edge. He's having to come up the guts. And he looks like he's about 3 human beings wide. He's a big man, so he tends to draw some media attention as well. So for me, I'm actually going to say Watt has been the best so far.
Well, that's fair enough. Well, when I thought about the Adrian Peterson pick, I thought about what would happen to the Vikings if he left, and then what would happen if he got put onto a contender that didn't have a running game, say the Patriots. When you take him out of the Vikings lose every game. You put him on the Patriots, and that's a Super Bowl.
Well, we actually are doing okay on the run game this year, but I take your point. And if they did that, I think that would be a much more fair and logical way of determining the MVP, but unfortunately, I feel like that's not what they do at all. Yeah, that would be a very normal way of determining the most valuable player to a team. But let's keep this moving on, Kirk. So we've kind of figured out who we think is the MVP thus far, but who do you reckon is going to get it at the end of the year? You go first.
Well, this is much like the Brownlow medal, where it's a midfielder's medal. The MVP goes to quarterbacks. It's just
or running backs if they have strong seasons.
Oh, running backs, but I mean, it's mostly a quarterback's award, it would seem. It's my perception anyway. I'm not too sure who you give it to.
I got my pick.
Is it Aaron Rodgers?
It's not Aaron Rodgers.
Ah. Well, look, I'd like to say Peyton Manning again. RG3 would probably be the fan favorite, I guess. But if Aaron Rodgers can turn the Packers around a little bit more, he's probably going to get in there with this combination of tactful running and passing and George Clooney-esque looks. He's probably going to get it.
RG3.
You're gonna go with the fan favorite.
No, no, no. I'm going with Tom Brady.
Oh God! Well, I say that RG3 would be the fan favorite if it was purely down to fans and what fans. To be RG3.
No. I'm going to go with Tom Brady, and this is why. I said before that you've got to have a good record. The Patriots have got a little bit of a cakewalk for the rest of the season, so I think they could conceivably get to 12-4 or 11-5. And the other thing I said is you've got to have good numbers. I realize, and rightfully so, that Manning has really thrown up some crazy numbers in the first half of this year. I think that'll slow down a little bit just because of what's going to happen to his body and what's going to happen to the weather in Denver as well. The Patriots are on pace to just put up the most absurd numbers anybody's ever put up in offense this year. I mean, the pace that they play the game and the amount of yards they're getting a game is out of control. In London last week, they broke a record for, I think it was the most consecutive games where the team accrued over 400 or 450 yards total in an offense. And it's just the fact that once again, the Patriots have switched their offensive system entirely in the space of a year. They're now a very run-heavy team. They basically run out of a no-huddle setup, which is really strange to see. And Brady is obviously working a deep threat into Lloyd, into his game, and trying to balance Welker, Gronkowski, Hernandez, Lloyd, and some other options as well. So I feel like if he can kind of keep putting up the stats he is, I feel like people will forget the early season struggles if they tear off, you know, 6 or 7 wins in a row, get to the second seed in the AFC with the defense they've had especially. He could be in the mix.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you. Did you notice, Eric, that we also chose two incredibly good-looking men?
Yeah. Ooh. All right. This is going to get steamy if I keep talking about Tom Brady. So what current division leader, Kirk, do you think won't be in the playoffs at the end of the year?
Baltimore Ravens, baby. I think they're gone. Yeah. I think they're going to recede big time here. The Steelers are going to win the division anyway, and then trying to get a wild card spot might be a little bit tougher than they thought, especially when you've got a good bad team in Miami sitting at 4-4. The Chargers are 4-4, which is probably their best record since the 1960s at this time of the year. And they always fire up late in the season. So I can see them coming through and sneaking into the wild card instead.
So we have already mentioned quite a few times, Kirk, that the NFC is a tougher division, a tougher conference than the AFC.
Yep.
I'm going to go with the Giants, partially just because I hate the Giants.
But, because you don't want to lose another Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's a factor as well. But they just,
they do this every year though, Eric.
They don't do this every year. They started off well, and they've looked pretty bad in the last couple of weeks. They've only got 3 games up on Philly and Dallas. Probably Philly aren't going to do it, but Dallas could actually get their shit together and tear a couple of games off the Giants. And there is no way there's going to be a wild card coming out of that division. So whoever comes second there ain't making the playoffs. So my dearest hope is that the Giants somehow, you know, get knocked out.
That's what you're holding your hope on, is it?
Yeah, I think the Ravens is the logical pick and the Giants is the roughie.
Is Tom Coughlin the only multiple Super Bowl winning coach that gets sacked every year?
Yeah, pretty well.
I mean, it's just absurd. What do you have to do in New York to get people to like you?
Well, not be an asshole to your players. I mean, he's famously bad in terms of player management because he's just a grumpy old man who sits on his porch and...
And how many rings do those players have?
No, I agree. But you have to understand when they start losing, this is New York. So it's not like his Rex Ryan where he can be losing and everyone would, you know... Let him walk over the top of them so his feet don't have to touch the ground because I love him so much. So yeah, it's just an interesting. You are correct. It's insane that they talk about him being a bad coach, but I think a lot of it is because of his demeanor.
Yeah, well, he's got two Super Bowls. So I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, exactly. So what about the alternative suggestion, Kirk? What about a team that's currently looking on the outside in? And can you see a non-playoff team sneaking in?
I'm going to go with the Colts, Eric, just because of the story. I like the story of the whole Pagano thing. I like the Luck story, the fact that they sucked it so bad to get him, and now he's actually producing. As we've said, that side of the league's weaker. The 5-3, which isn't bad at all. So they're sitting in the wild card spot at the moment. And I think they can hang on because they've got a good quarterback, a good young quarterback. And who knows what the hell is going to happen with some of the other teams. The Chargers usually are good late in the season, but they have Norv. And then the Ravens are going to fall to pieces, and the Miami Dolphins are the next one, or the Jets, or the Bills. And all three of those teams are kind of stinky. So I think the Colts could sneak in with a wild card.
Before I get to my pick, I will point something out with what you've just suggested. If basically everything you've suggested comes true, you realize the first week of the playoffs would be Indianapolis traveling to Denver.
And you know what that would mean, Eric?
Yeah. Peyton awesome. Having to play his old team. All that stuff would be amazing.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm all down for a story. I like a story. Mm-hmm. So I desperately hope that happens.
Yeah, yeah. For me, I'm going to go with Miami, 4-4 currently. I think they could sneak in. I think Cincinnati are actually an outside shot as well because they're better than their 3-5 record suggests. But for some reason, I mean, as wrong as I have been about a lot of people in the NFL, I think I have been the wrongest about Reggie Bush at this point, because how he has turned into an every down 100-plus yard a game guy is beyond me. But he has been, and I think especially as the year turns, you know, year gets older, that can really get you a lot of wins. So, yeah.
Well, maybe it's helped because he's in a team now that doesn't have a great quarterback, so the passing rates aren't as high. I mean, he wasn't probably getting all that much ball at New Orleans because Drew Brees throws the crap out of it.
Yeah, but he just used to look wrong. He used to run really upright like a chicken, so when people hit him, he'd get thrown backwards. He didn't look like a real NFL quarterback. But yeah, hats off to him. He's been fantastic. All right, mate. What was your thing?
HGH.
Well, yeah, there is that as well.
Well, look, Eric, I had a special one for you.
Bonus.
In the world of sports, there's been many great nicknames, and American football and basketball have some great ones, along the lines of the Nigerian Nightmare, the Round Mound of Rebound, Jopra's Billa the Vanilla Gorilla, and Who Rocks the Party, Gallinari. What I want to know is the Muscle Hamster the worst nickname in world sport?
Who is that? Peyton Hillis?
No, that's the Tampa Bay running back.
Oh, right. The guy who just went for 10,000 fantasy points this
week.
Yeah,
Martin. What's his name?
Doug Martin.
Doug Martin. The worst name to even create a nickname out of. You can't rhyme anything with Doug Martin. But, yeah, his nickname's the Muscle Hamster.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's really bad, in fact.
I don't know if there is any worse. I mean,
the fact that they called Charles Tillman Peanut Tillman because he looked like a peanut when he was a baby is kind of stupid. But yeah, Muscle Hamster tops that easily.
Well, I get it because he's small. I think he's only 5'8" or something like that. So I get the hamster bit, but then the muscle. It's just not good. You can't put that on a headline.
He sounds like more like one of those idiots I watch eat 10 million calories in one go on YouTube rather than an NFL player.
And sculling big things of hot sauce.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, I think that pretty well wraps up our view of the NFL at the halfway point. All right, so we will be back on Tuesday next week, a day late, with a special podcast. It's going to be a retirement podcast because one of us is going to become a jet setter for a couple of months. So I figured, Kirk, we could sit down and talk about essentially what comprises a proper sporting retirement.
Oh, that sounds good to me. Look, I'll be back in Melbourne as well in late December, so we can do a couple of sexual together podcasts.
It'll be good. It's just going to be a half an hour recording of us making out.
Yeah, well, you know, we give the viewers what they want.
We can handball the football out in the gardens or something like that. Invite Vinny. Anyway. Anyway, we will be back on Tuesday with that podcast. Until then, you can follow this podcast at sportspilligamy.com. You can also find us on Facebook and iTunes, where you can subscribe to keep track. Leave us any feedback you've got on the Facebook page or on the blog. We'd love to hear it. Until Tuesday, I'm Eric George.
I'm Kirk Delzio.
And that's Sports Polygamy. Thanks for listening. See ya.